This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show. From Wintergreen Nursery Landscaping and Florist, here's the Commissioner of Dirt, Mike Winters, and the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Good afternoon there. It's 4:06. And he is Mike Winters.
No, my name is Paul Penguin.
Paul Penguin. PP for short.
Yeah, PP for short. You're right. Oh, if you're out there listening and you haven't turned the radio off, we're going to have a show.
How do you like the weather we're having there, guy?
Oh, it's so peachy keen. I love all the smoke and the darkness and the... Yeah, it's just really great. Well, anyway, thanks for listening. And if you have any questions regarding your landscape, please call and ask your question at 673-4464, and we'll try to answer it and give you a qualified answer. And it's hard sometimes to assess your problem when I'm sitting in this room and you're in your yard telling me about your problem. It's always better when a person can see what's actually happening. And it might, I might miss about 1% of the accuracy over the air, but not much. But this show is basically an education show. It's to enlighten folks as to what's available out there in the nursery landscape world, things you can do with your yard, things that you can make your home more beautiful, more saleable, more enjoyable while you live there. And then should you decide, the National Realtors Association of I read some of their stuff, and they say over and over, the well-landscaped front yard with a nice bright green lawn and flowers, etc., usually sells much, much more quickly than something that is not landscaped and just kind of, brown and maybe some scraggly shrubs. And, the scraggly shrub place will also sell, but not near at the price that the landscape place does. So landscaping adds value to your home. It also gives you a sense of accomplishment. It also looks good, and you like to spend time in your yard that way. So occasionally, you get out there and you add a few things, and if you don't know what those things should be added, you call the show, 673-4464, and I can help you. But today, I'm talking about conifers. Conifers are basically cone-bearing evergreen trees, like spruce, Douglas fir, pines, or any evergreen tree that has cones, and it's evergreen, it's called a conifer. That's just the catch-all word for them. And some can be grown in most parts of the United States of America. And then there are varieties that need special climatic conditions to survive and thrive. And for instance, juniper trees, they're conifers, and they do well in hot, dry desert regions. The Mojave Desert, the Arizona Desert, Eastern Oregon, places like that. There are different types of juniper trees, but they like that hot, dry, sandy, rocky, ugly soil where nothing else will grow except a creosote bush, maybe. But sometimes in the Pacific Northwest, they don't do so good because normally we have abundant rain and snow and freezing conditions. And the freezing conditions are not that much of a detriment to them because in the high desert country there are freezing conditions in the winter. But when we have a real rainy year or a real snowy year where we get a lot of soil moisture, they're not tuned into that. And some are tougher than others, and some will not make it, and then there are some that will make it. But I'm not going to really dwell on the junipers this time. I've got some other things I want to talk about. But there are varieties of fir trees that need, for instance, high elevations with like much snow to do well. They'll grow down here sometimes. It depends on the weather. It depends on the heat, the volume of smoke we might have. But anyway, for instance, the noble fir. Everybody loves a noble fir. Noble fir Christmas trees are the cat's meow because they're so cool looking and they're just all that. Well, a real noble fir that grows up around, naturally at around 5,000 foot elevation, Diamond Lake kind of elevation, that area. all by themselves in the in the forest. They look really good. They look like the perfect Christmas tree, you know. And that's where it likes it. That's where it does well. But it struggles like in our coastal areas and like in our interior valleys, which is the Umpqua Valley and the Willamette Valley. I mean, there are some varieties that will grow there, but they're not the type of tree that really likes it here in that hot, dry kind of thing. So it's kind of a touchy tree in that respect.
It's kind of finicky.
Yeah, it can survive in our area, but needs enough moisture in the summer, for instance, to survive. And once it's well established, it can probably survive on its own 90 or 80% of the time, because there are some large ones in Douglas County. There are some large ones in some of the older homes that we have over on, what's that across the river? Laurelwood?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Laurelwood area. Some of those homes were built, you know, way early 1900s and things like that.
Wow, and before my time.
Yeah, even older than you, buddy. and there are a few noble firs over in there that were planted years and years ago, but that's kind of a river area where it's cooler, foggier, a little bit more moist than, say, out in the middle of Garden Valley, that kind of thing. So they do grow, but they do have a tougher time here at our elevation. It just needs enough moisture in that summer to really get going. One year I planted 900 noble fir in my field at the nursery.
Jeez.
Yeah, and they look really great until about August.
Hmm.
And I had an irrigation system on them, and I was watering them, but it was so hot for about, a two-week period that every one of them died. Every one of them.
Every one of the
900 noble fir that I planted died. They turned brown.
That's horrible.
It was horrible. I cried. Not only that, I lost a bunch of money too. But you know, for the planting, the trees, and the care and all that. But I thought, yeah, no more noble firs here. I'll let somebody else do that. And when they get up to a certain size, I'll go to a nursery and, you know, like Portland gets more rain. And there are big nurseries up there that will grow noble fir. And that they're easier to grow up there. They're easier to keep alive simply because it's cooler, more moist, and we're almost like a desert in comparison, you know, weather-wise. But
so they do well in Washington?
Yeah, in Washington they would do well. You know, the further north you get, the less heat you accumulate in the summertime. You've got more summer rain kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But and they really do like that high elevation country. That's where they grow naturally. That's
right.
Where they thrive up there. And that's a good thing. Now, on the flip side of that coin, Douglas fir is a tree, you know, for the Pacific Northwest that's going to do very well in our hills and our yards, even though in the last 3-4 years, because of the drought conditions that we've experienced, some of the natural ones that I've seen, and I've spoken about this in the past, some of the natural ones I've seen on different ranches out in Dixonville or even out in Olalla where I live in that area, they get up about, 15, 20 feet, and the root system is not established well enough. And so consequently, since there's no soil moisture, they begin to die. And so you'll see 3 or 4 or 5 in a group or even more all of a sudden drop their needles and that's it. Whereas the older ones that are, say, 12 inches in diameter and up, and they're, 40 feet tall, their root system is deeper and more established, and their survivability is better, even though some of those even die. I had a couple right beside my creek here that died over the last year, and they were 18, 20 inches in diameter, 100 feet tall, 70 to 100 feet tall, and so I took them down. And they were right beside the creek, and the creek's got water in it. But
that's what I was going to say. Did the creek dry up? No,
it didn't, because I've got little pools of water all the way through there. But sometimes that happens, and it could be a bug, could be a weakened condition because of the drought, and then a bug gets in, and then bingo, they start to go down.
They're gone.
Yeah, but Doug fir in a normal situation in a yard in Roseburg will, with irrigation, is going to make it. And there are other firs that will do well in Douglas County and can be found at local nurseries. Now, I discovered one, and this is one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. It's called the Nordham Fir. It looks like a very full, well-branched noble fir. It's full. Noble fir kind of has a spacing between mm-hmm. the world of branches, and that way people like them because they do the ornament thing, and the ornaments are hanging.
They're easy to decorate.
Exactly, exactly. And, they're different. And the Nordham fir is, it looks like a noble, but it has more branches, and it's fuller. But it's kind of the same conical shape and all that. But here's the cool thing about it. It can withstand the drought. I've planted a couple hundred out of my place. I think this is their third year in the ground. And they were just seedlings, foot high. Now they're over 2 feet, but under 3. And I don't water them. I don't do anything to them. And I have not had one die.
Is that right?
Yeah, in 3 years.
Wow.
Whereas I've had Doug fir in the same area die. So the Nordham fir, it's a beautiful tree, but it can withstand the drought. So I've kind of switched my
focus.
Focus, yeah. And so I'm growing more of the Nordhams and buying in bigger ones that are already, 5 and 6 or 7 feet. Well, not 7 feet, but a 5-6 foot Nordham fir is a pretty heavy tree. It's a couple hundred pounds in a pot and all that.
Oh, geez.
But it makes a great living tree, or it makes a good yard tree. It's a good landscape tree.
Are they kind of a slow grower?
Yeah, they're not. They're a slow grower. They're not going to grow, a foot, 18 inches a year on you. They might grow, 10 inches a year. And but they're really deep green. And they have a very nice natural shape. It's just that, if you took out half of every other branch all the way down, then it would look like a noble.
No, noble.
Yeah, but it's just full.
That's a lot of work to make it look like.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, you've done it.
Yeah. No, I haven't done it, but I imagine it being done. How's that?
Okay.
Yeah, but they make a beautiful yard tree if you have the room, because it'll grow large. It's, like I said, it's not really fast, but it'll grow to 50 feet tall and maybe 20 feet wide. And for a living tree, a living Christmas tree, that's perfect. You could decorate it in your yard. Your kids would love it.
Yeah.
And grandkids would love it. And the whole neighborhood would love it. And you got this beautiful tree there. Now, like I said, the nobles that I've tried, even at my own home, where it's cooler and more moisture because of the shade situation I'm in, because I live in a canyon, they've even bit the dust after 5 or 6 years. It just they were looking good, and then you get into a few dry years and then they start to lose their needles, and then one day you go out there and the puppy's brown.
Oh
man, I hate that. It's this it's just bad. and one thing about the Nordham firs, you can also put them in a pot. Get a big pot, big container, and put them on your deck, put them on your patio, and they make a nice patio tree too for a number of years before it gets too big for the pot and you got to plant it somewhere. But it's a nice one, and it does well in that container. It's not a wimp of a tree. That's the best thing.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
the best thing. Now, conifers, pines are conifers, and they can survive on neglect and dryness and everything else. I mean, they're not the Christmas tree kind of thing. They're more of a timber tree. But, you take a ponderosa pine, and it's planted as a reforestation tree on a hard site. And a hard site is usually a south or west exposure in full sun and in poor soil. And they do well. I mean, I've planted hundreds of them, thousands of them actually over the years. And I've got them on my place, and I've planted them for C&D Lumber and Roseburg Forest Products. We did that 1 year, way back when. And it's just a good, tough tree. It's not as fast as a Douglas fir, but there are certain kind of lumber and wood products that you can make from them. They're not what you call the sought-after tree, but they'll take them if they're in that kind of place. But the cool thing about it is it can take the heat. It can take the full sun. It doesn't need the water once it's established.
It's not a wimpy tree.
No,
either.
It ain't a wimpy tree at all. But it would make a good yard tree if you had a yard large enough to accommodate it. And that would have to be, a yard that's easily twice or three times the size of your normal in town yard, because
yeah.
you don't want this tree to get 80 feet tall and fall on your neighbor's house either.
No. And, Sioux City.
Yeah, do we have a break?
We do
something?
Right
okay,
now.
Okay, well, let's take a break.
Shall we? Okay, we'll be right back. It's Wednesday. It's Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN. How's your coffee? Thank you.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Well, we are back. Did you check the temp? I haven't had a chance yet.
It said 77 or 78 when I came in.
Did it?
Yeah, I was surprised because...
Feel kind of muggy out
yeah,
there.
Yeah, kind of muggy and kind of a little smoky too, you know?
Yeah, just a little bit. A little smoky,
you know,
yeah.
You breathe in chunks anymore. You know?
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah, anyway, I'm talking about... conifers and things that you can plant in your yard, and like I said on the ponderosa pine, you don't want to put it in the middle of your lawn. It won't like it, because no care is needed for a ponderosa pine. They grow, like I say, in central and eastern Oregon, where it's hot and dry and not
there's
much
nobody
rain.
Around.
Nobody around, and for pines. Now this is not ponderosa, but for pines, I found 44 different varieties listed in the Western Garden Book. So there's a whole lot of them you can choose from. And then now one of my favorite conifers is a Deodar cedar. Uh-huh. It is graceful. It's blue-green, fat needles. It's a fast-growing conifer. It's a hardy tree and can be grown with or without care. It doesn't matter. I've got them planted amongst some of my trees, for years at out in the boondocks out there, and they grow just fine. They look good, and they would do well in your yard. In fact, it's when people have them, they really like them. They like the shape, the way they hang, the branches mm-hmm. hang. They're a nice color. They grow fairly fast if they've got the soil and the water to do it. But they'll still survive even if they don't have the good soil, and if they don't even have the water, they still do it. Mm-hmm. Because I've grown mine. I've got a row of them on my fence line that, it's been there for 20 years, something like that. And mm-hmm. They're beautiful, and I never water them. I couldn't afford to hook up the hoses and drag it out there, and get them out there,
And it keeps the neighbors away.
Yeah, but they grow very full. And in the sun and in the shade, they're not quite as full, but they're still a good looking tree. And there are some other conifers that grow well in Oregon, and that's what you call the true cedars. And there's only three varieties of true cedar. What we call cedar around here are actually in the cypress family. They're not true cedars. We call it Western red cedar, incense cedar, Port Orford cedar. Those are actually cypress. From a botanical perspective, but there's only three true cedars in the world, and they're the Deodar cedar, the cedar of Lebanon, and the Atlas cedar, and I use all three of those varieties in my landscaping projects because of their shape, their color, their hardiness, and their overall beauty, and they just add so much because they're colorful and they have a wide range of growth difference, whereas the Deodar is a fuller one. The Cedar of Lebanon is not so full, has some of the same characteristics, but it's not as full with a lot of branches. Mm-hmm. And the Atlas Cedar is even less full, more open space, but it has a very distinctive shape and also a color. Mm. Like what?
No, I'm just listening.
Well, I thought you were going to ask a question.
Well, I was thinking about, is it the cedar that has this, the distinct odor?
Like the incense cedar, yeah. What we call the incense cedar and Western Red Cedar and Port Orford Cedar, they have a more distinct odor. The ones, these true cedars, don't have an odor that would be similar. They have an odor of some sort, but it's
not the one.
No, it's not. It's not like what they make hope chests out of, yeah, or something like that. These are not lumber trees now on the Deodar cedars. They can be, but there's no market for Deodar cedar wood. I mean, there is for a small wood shop or something, or mm-hmm, a custom
right,
guy who builds tables or hope chests or chest of drawers or, yeah, bookcases.
On a small,
know, yeah, small stuff. Yeah,
yeah.
But it's the Deodar cedar is like the one of the true cedars that is most commonly found in nurseries. You can go to just about any nursery, even the box stores have them sometimes, and it's just well thought of because it is so attractive. It is actually native to the Himalayas.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, I mean, that's got to be a tough tree to be, that's where you come from, is the Himalayas.
Yeah.
And it's the fastest growing one of the three true cedars that I'm going to be talking about. It can reach like 80 feet tall and be about 40 feet wide and spread at maturity. And
wow.
There's some in Stewart Park that are probably 3 feet in diameter. Easy 100 feet tall, 80 to 100 feet tall. And they've been there for umpty-ump years. And those are parts of Stewart Park where, you know, they got irrigated lawn, like out on the golf course. You know, there's islands of trees out, mm-hmm, there. There's some Deodar cedars and things out there, just kind of popped around. So whoever designed that and planted that, you know, looking in the future, hey, there's going to be a nice tree sometime. And I think there's some at the country club as well. But they'll get 80 feet tall, but that's like in 100 years. You know, it's not like they zoom right up there. And the branches, on what makes them so attractive, the branches kind of sweep down, and then they kind of turn up at the ends. And it's like the perfect tree look. You envision this forest tree, and the branches come down, they sweep back, mm-hmm, up, and you know, it's very picturesque in that respect. Whereas a Doug fir, the branches will go straight out. When they get too long, they just sag.
Yeah.
They just sag down.
Kind of like us when we get old.
Yeah, right. You know, like kind of like you. Like you're sagging right there in the chair.
I'm sagging now.
I'm only kidding. Oh gosh.
No, he's not.
Yeah, I wrote it. I wrote it down. He's got to read it. But again, this is a tree you don't want to plant in your lawn or too close to any structure, you know, garage, sidewalk, driveway, fence, neighbor's house. You know, you don't want, because they will in time get, you know, fairly large. Again, if you have a big backyard or a few acres of rural property where you live, it's a great tree to have. It's like I say, they're picturesque, it's a no care tree. And the needles are kind of short, they're soft, and almost a green blue in color. Depending, you know, when the brand new growth comes out in the spring, there's green, but there's a little bit of tinge of blue in there. It's not overwhelmingly blue, but it's not overwhelmingly green.
Yeah,
you can tell it's there. Yeah, you can tell it's there. And then the older, as the needles get older, they turn more of a deeper green. They're not super deep, but they do. And they're, like I say, they're short needles, they're soft. I mean, you can actually grab a branch and it won't stab you, it won't put, mm-hmm, holes in your hand, where some of the other,
some do,
yeah,
yes,
like some of the pines or even Doug fir, you know, you can grab it, and the little needles are stiff and sharp, and they're, wow, man, what did I do that for?
Yeah, they let you know they're there.
Yeah, you do not grab me, buddy. But the Deodar is a great tree for a landscape, and over the over the years, many offshoots have been cloned. You know, the mad scientists in the greenhouse say, "Hey, let's graft this thing to this and see what happens." And they're, you know, they get in their little greenhouses and start doing weird things. And they really do some fantastic, you know, different types of trees. Mm-hmm. And there are these clone trees are reproduced by these plant geneticists, and then they're, after a while, if they grow in the testing period, usually the testing period is 5, maybe even 10 years at the test nursery, if you will, and when they see that they're running true to what they grafted them to be, then they start getting out onto the market. And then into the marketplace, and then you start seeing them at nurseries and things like that. I love all these weird things. They're different. Mm-hmm. They look good. They're pretty. They're different. They some of them, you know, grow sideways, and some of them are ground huggers, and some of them grow tall. But it's the color. It's the shape. It's different. In a yard, say that there's a lot of greenery, you have something like that that's a kind of a gold green.
It's gonna stand out.
Yeah, it kind of stands out and adds a whole different look to the landscape. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's the kind of stuff. At least that's the kind of stuff I I like. When they do some of these things, I'll give you a sample here. This one's called Aurea, and Aurea is a deodar cedar, but it's the foliage is yellow in the spring and then turns golden green in the summer. And then there's a ground cover type called Pendula, which grows almost flat on the ground.
Really?
And you can plant it to hang over a retaining wall, or if you got a rock bank and you got the tree up there, it'll hang down in there and grow on the rocks or over the. Yeah, it's crazy.
They still call it a tree?
Yeah, they call it a tree because it was grafted from a sport of another weird tree and grafted onto like a deodar cedar root wad, stem, and bingo, you got this whole different ball game.
That is strange.
Oh yeah, it's cool. and then the silver mist is another one. Its growing tips are white when it puts out new growth in the spring. Here's this green evergreen, and all of a sudden the new growth comes out and the tips are white. It's as white as your T-shirt. It looks like, what's wrong with that tree? But it's actually a very, very picturesque, very, very pretty tree. And
do they stay white?
Well, after a while, they kind of turn a little green, but they're not green at all. Uh-huh. And so it looks like it's almost decorated with ornaments all the time. And then there's a very dwarf variety called White Imp. It's I-M-P, Imp. And it gets to be about 3 feet tall and about 3 feet wide. It's a true dwarf. I mean, that's about it. You might have to prune it once every 5 years or so.
Perfect.
You know, I've never seen one. I've never I've seen a picture of them, but I've never seen one, you know, in person.
In person, yeah.
Yeah, in person, right.
In person.
Hi there, little white imp. But, you know, I'm looking for some, and I'm going to find some. And when the foliage gets a little bit older, it's like a silvery green color with a cream colored tips to the branches. Really, really nice. A different tree.
Oh, we got a break.
We got a break? Okay.
We haven't got any phone calls, have we?
Yeah, I don't know. 673-4464.
There you go. We're waiting for you.
Yeah, where are you?
Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show right here. News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240, KQEN.
Did my little car wash rain dance earlier, so maybe it will rain.
Well, three or four inches would be good, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, you're going to turn it up, or you really...
You go.
No, I can't hear myself almost.
How's okay, that?
That's good.
Yeah.
Anyway, I've been talking about...
That blasts me out.
I know. I've been talking about conifers and how you can decorate them and who the tough guys are and who the weaklings are. And they are, you know, great trees, and they last a long time. They'll last your lifetime. And the third true cedar that I want to speak about to you today is called the Cedar of Lebanon. And it is native to Lebanon and Turkey. And it's also in the Blue Atlas Mountains of Morocco. And,
Didn't know those existed.
Well, yeah, not many people did. It's a very slow grower. Maybe about a foot a year on average, if it's, you know, okay. But can eventually get to about 80 feet tall. Again,
wow.
It's not something you put next to the driveway or the back steps.
Yeah.
And the foliage is a very bright green needle, and it has very well-spaced branching pattern. It's not a thick, you can see the trunk, you can see the branches, and, you know, it's not a thick-looking tree like a Nordum fir that I was talking about earlier, where you can't see in between the branches. This is lots of air space around them. And they're really an interesting tree. I planted one out at my place, I forget how many years ago, but it's about 40 feet tall at this point
it's
in time.
Pretty good size.
And when Snowmageddon came, it was kind of interesting. There was branches from the fir trees that were broken, but there were no branches from that one broken. They bent, but they didn't break. And the same with the Deodar cedars. Those branches bent, but they didn't break.
They were
stronger than the Douglas fir, you know. So that
interesting.
That got my
attention
very, very quickly. And they're not a regular shaped conifer. You know, you're thinking Christmas tree.
It ain't gonna do that.
No, it's not that way at all. It's more of a natural, wild looking tree, but it's very, very pretty because the needles are just bright blue, heavy duty blue, and hence the name Blue Atlas Cedar.
That makes sense.
There are some green Atlas cedars, too, but they're not near as attractive. I mean, they have the same shape. They have the same growth habit.
They look more common.
Yeah, they're more common. And, you know, if you're putting together a landscape, say, on a pretty good-sized piece of property, you could put a green one out there, and be, oh, that's a nice tree. It looks good. But you put the blue Atlas cedar out there, and, wow, that is really a neat tree. That's where your focus goes. So.
Mm-hmm.
That's the cool thing about them.
You don't have one of those, do you?
Oh, yeah, I've got them all. I've got the Cedars of Lebanon. I've got the Blue Atlas. I've got the Weeping Blue Atlas. I've got the Deodars. I got 120 acres, man. I can put it anything I want anywhere. I still got room, even. Even though I've been planting trees out there for 44 years.
Some of them must be getting pretty big.
Yeah, some of them are. Some of them are, I'll tell you what. But... And it's kind of a irregular shaped tree. It's like I say, it's not one you see in many landscapes because of it's kind of rare. Mm-hmm. But I have a group of them down in my field. I planted 30 years ago, and they're looking pretty good. They're nice. They're just growing and looking good. And
doing their thing.
Yeah, doing their thing. and this year. I've seen where they're forming cones. It's taken a long time for cones to form, but they, unlike a Doug fir, the cones on a Douglas fir, for instance, they form on the lower parts of the branch, so they're hanging down and out toward the end of the branches, where on these true cedars, the cones don't face down. They face up. They come on the stem, and they go straight up. So it's like total opposite of the Douglas fir cones or the ponderosa pine cones, and also they're tight. They don't have. You look at a Douglas fir cone and you can see that it's a cone. Well, this doesn't look like a cone. It looks like a big green egg, or it's not a green egg, but a kind of a bluish green egg, and it's standing straight up on the stem. and they're pretty high in the tree. I'm going to have a ladder and a pole saw to knock some of them down. But I know they're a hardy tree because, again, I haven't irrigated them in all the years that they were there. I've maybe fertilized them 40 years or 30 years ago or something like that. But, you know, they in a irrigated good soil, they're going to grow a little bit faster. I've got what you call forest soil. It's pretty loose, and it's a little bit rocky, not bad, but it's not what you call primo. And so it's a little bit slower. These also make a good yard tree, and they do well. And you can, again, give them room. They want to have room. You don't want to have to let them go for 15 years and then say, oh, that tree is too stinking big because I planted it within 6 feet of the deck or something like that, unless your deck is large and you've got lots of room. There is a weeping variety of the Blue Atlas Cedar. The weeping variety is called Pendula Sargentia.
Well, it is a mouthful.
Yeah, I'll tell you. Pendula Sargentia. But it looks great in a rock garden or growing next to a waterfall in your yard. It's a great tree, very tough. Looks good in like a Japanese-type garden. A lot of rock and pathways and maybe, like I say, a little waterfall in one corner. You have one or two, maybe even three spaced out really well. You don't need anything else because they're the focal point of that rock garden, and you know they're easy and they're, like I say, no work.
That's my kind of tree.
Yeah. And I was talking about the Atlas Cedar earlier too. It comes with green and blue needles, so that's kind of
nice.
Cool. And not on the same tree now.
Oh, all right.
One can be blue, one can be green. Okay.
You got me, had me going there.
The Blue Atlas Cedar, the upright one I was talking about earlier, it's probably one of the more popular evergreen trees, ever blue, because they're just unique. They're pretty.
Yeah.
And when people say, oh, what's that blue? Well, it's a this. And it's fairly slow growing to, like, say, 60 feet, somewhere in there. And that's native to North Africa, where it grows wild.
You'll be doing.
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of these trees, and how they got here to the United States is real interesting, because way back in the day when the ships were sailing all over the world and selling, you know, oranges into China, and the sailors were there, and they would see a tree or a shrub or something and take it back to America. And, you know, it looked good. It was different. They'd never seen one before. So, you know, there was a couple of those tree nuts way back then.
Let's take this one.
I would have been one of them. I was like, wow, man, look at that tree. That's cool. Take that and take it home. And, you know, that's... Yeah. That's how Japanese maples basically got to San Francisco and California prior to World War II, and then during World War II, and then after World War II, a lot of Japanese folks were
bringing... You're on your own, man.
Yeah, they were bringing stuff like that here.
Because, oh,
in
I
Japan,
see. Okay.
Because in Japan, they grow wild. They're just native to Japan. And
it's no big thing to them.
No, well, it is a big thing in that they're a unique tree.
Right.
But, you know, it's like...
It's pretty common.
Yeah, it's common, but it's so unique. So that's what the sailors did way back then. You know, it's like, gosh. And then there are a weeping variety of these, like I said. Mm. And they grow, six, 7 feet tall, maybe a little bit taller. But they grow sideways. They weep. The branches all grow downward, and they're kind of twisty and gnarly and you know,
weird.
Just really, really cool looking, actually. And I've got three of them planted out in front of my nursery along the road there, along Highway 99, and they've been in 25 years, something like that. And the trunks are, 10 inches in diameter or maybe 12 inches in diameter at the base. And then I trained, as the branches went up and they weeped, I kind of trained them out a little bit, you know, staked them up so the branches would go horizontally more and reach out. So some of them are maybe from branch tip to branch tip, 20 feet long.
Wow.
But they're only 6-7 feet tall. You know, so it really makes a picturesque scene. And they're, like I say, right along the shoulder of the road on my property, but right there next to Highway 99. So everybody who drives by, there are all 11,000 cars a day, they see these things. And it's amazing how many folks come in and say, oh, I love those trees. Do you have them for sale? Yeah, sure, right here, you know, and then show them. And then I explain to them how to, well, how did you do that? Well, I explain, and this is what you do, and this is how you do it. It takes a few years to get it there.
Right.
But, you know, if you're patient and treat the tree correctly, it's going to work for you.
It's going to respond.
And you can, I've tied branches that were small and very flexible. I've actually tied them in knots. Loose knot, and not a tight knot, but a loose one. And then over the years, as those branches gain diameter growth, they're touching, and then pretty soon they're growing together, and you've got these two branches cross, but there's a big empty space in the middle where they cross, and it's interesting what you can do.
Yeah.
And I did that for a guy out in Winston one year. Well, I had it growing in the nursery. And his name was Larry Waite, and he had a cool yard, and he was a friend of mine. He was a teacher in Winston, and they loved trees. And he came in the nursery one day. He said, oh, I got to have that tree, Mike. And I said, I don't want to sell it, Larry. He said, oh, I want it. And so I put a big high price on it, and then he still wanted it. And I thought, shoot. I was working on that for 5-10 years now. I don't want to sell it. But anyway, I did.
And nobody stole that one.
Nobody. It was too heavy. It was too heavy. It would take two guys to steal that one. And they couldn't put it in their basket on their bike and ride away with it. But so we delivered it, and I actually planted it for him because he had a really nice, in his backyard, he had a really nice waterfall and all that kind of stuff. And he put it in the backyard. And for about 3 years, it just did beautifully. And he'd call me over once a year, and I'd kind of prune it a little bit and shape it for him. Mm-hmm. But it was tied in knots. It was just so cool. You ought to come out to my place sometime, and I can show you these things and walk you around and say, this is what I was talking about. Yeah, and then you go, oh, yeah, now, you know.
Now that makes more sense.
That makes sense now. I understand.
And we got to take a break. Cool.
Okay, we'll take a break if you insist.
We all tie it up in knots if we don't.
I know. Like a leaping blue out of the sea.
More with Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show in just a couple. News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Hanging in there with 81 degrees. A little smoky and muggy out there, Mike.
As long as it's not smoky and muggy in here, we're cool.
We're great, though. Yeah.
We're great. Anyway, before I finish with the Deodar cedars and stuff, you know all this smoke has a fine ash that comes down, filters down, and it dawned on me finally that our plants are getting all this fine ash on them, and it might be a good idea once in a while, go out and check your broadleaf stuff, rhodes or azaleas or hydrangeas or camellias, you know, things that have a lot of leaf surface. And if you see this fine ash, just rub your finger over it, and you can tell, you can see it come off. It's a good thing to kind of rinse them off with a hose. It wouldn't hurt to rinse them off, because in the long run, unless it rains, they're going to stay there, and it's going to affect the plant. It's going to affect the leaf. And somebody brought that to my attention here just the other day, and I thought, yeah, that's right. See, but I don't pay much attention to that because we have a sprinkler system in the nursery that we irrigate with. Oh. So they're getting any of this fine ash that might be dropping on them gets washed off on a daily basis. So,
yeah. You don't really think about it.
But that's I meant to say that at the first of the program. Mm-hmm. And if anybody's listening, and you can go ahead and do it. It's good for your plants, okay? Anyway, I was talking about Weeping Blue Atlas Cedar before the break. And I like to use them. Not everybody likes them because they think, oh, what's wrong with that tree? That's too strange for my yard. I don't want that. I understand that. But for the free spirits out there that like my like my designs, designs that you know are kind of peculiar sometimes.
Carefree.
Yeah, that's good. I'm not peculiar. I love to use these in landscaping projects because they are so unique and beautiful, and they set the tone for the rest of the landscape. They set the tone, and then you're in the neighborhood, and you're walking by. A lot of people walking around, they go, wow, what is that tree? So they talk to the owner, and next thing you know, they want one, and, you know, where'd you get it? Oh, I got it at Wintergreen. Guess what? I sell them. Yeah, that's kind of an advertising.
There you go.
Not underhanded. Subliminal.
That word. That works.
Yeah. But at any rate, I was telling you, I tied branches together. I tied them in knots. You can shape them. You can bend them. You can make them go 40 feet wide and only 6 feet tall. I saw one up at Oregon Garden Nursery. It's up by Wilsonville. It's big nursery on the right-hand side of the road.
Yeah.
And they had one in a box for years right along the fence. And that puppy must have been 40 feet long from the center of the box.
Wow.
And only 5 feet tall, maybe.
Is that right?
Yeah, 4 and a
half. That's a strange-looking.
I watched it for years, and nobody ever bought it. And then the last trip up there, somebody bought it. So it was gone. So, and I don't know. I would say a specimen tree, a weeping blue atlas like that, it would be probably $40,000.
Wow. You know. Shall we try to get a call in?
If we got one, yeah, we got a call.
Hey, yeah. Real quick here.
Yeah, Doc is calling. I'd like to ask Mike,
yes.
How come no coddling moths in my tree for the first time in my life, and I don't spray?
Well, because I told them not to come to Douglas County again, and they pretty much stayed out.
Now, come on, Mike. This is Doc. I've been growing apples for 60 years. Yeah. First time not one coddling moth in an apple. It's an early apple. I'm eating them now. Red stripes going vertically down the apple. It's an early summer apple.
Well, I don't really have a real answer for you, Doc, because
I've never seen it in my life. Not one.
Well, maybe, how many apple trees you got?
Three.
And
but the rest of them are later in the season.
I see. But
actually, four. I got four.
Okay, but there's no evidence in any of the others.
Well, they're not ripe yet, so I haven't checked them.
Okay.
Not a single worm.
Huh.
I've
never
seen anything like it.
You might call Mark Christensen at the Farmers Co-op. He's really good. When I get stumped on something, he's got a dictionary and a book that tells you about everything, and he might have an idea on that. It's a good question. I really don't know.
By the way, your program is extremely good.
Well, thank you.
Extremely
thank you
good.
For listening.
I really mean it. It's a good. Very, very good. And it's quite sophisticated, but it's low-key. it's two opposites, but it actually is a very sophisticated program.
Well, I try to make it understandable so that people can actually use the information that I'm giving.
It's a very good program.
Thanks
a lot. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Well, that's it.
That's it. We have come to the end.
Okay. Well, thank you for listening, and come see us sometime. We're on Highway 99 south of Winston. Look for the big green roofs, and you'll see us.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
You're welcome.